On April 29th, a group of local youths demanding entry-level jobs on offshore ExxonMobil platforms. Cleaning, maintenance, and light construction jobs that typically went to foreign nationals recruited from India, the Philippines, or elsewhere, boarded speedboats and occupied a barge 20 miles offshore. ExxonMobil's Nigerian managers asked the Nket Labor Commissioner, Chief Samingo Etukakban, to help persuade the young men occupying the barge to leave. Etukakban was angry with ExxonMobil because in previous talks over jobs for Akwa Ibom youths, he felt that the corporation's public affairs officers had lied to him. Nonetheless, "we relented and went out to the barge by corporate speedboat," he recalled. ExxonMobil expatriates were present, Etukakban said, trying to end the sit-in. A Nigerian Navy warship soon turned up. ExxonMobil had summoned the Navy for assistance. Nigerian officers and sailors, determined to prove that they could defend the property of international oil corporations, boarded the barge on May 1st and arrested everyone, including the mediators invited out by ExxonMobil. "We were detained in very terrible conditions. 2 people to 1 handcuff, lying on a concrete floor," Etukakban recalled. He spent 23 days in custody before a National Assembly member secured his release. The next day, more youths with machetes forced their way into ExxonMobil's Kwa Ibo terminal and briefly held 2 expatriates hostage. The men escaped. Nigerian security forces fired on the demonstrators, killing 2 of them. ExxonMobil had been lucky to operate in the most peaceful area of the Delta, said Chief Induese Essien, the parliamentarian who freed Etukakban. But after the barge incident, by the summer of 2006, its local standing was deteriorating. ExxonMobil executives seemed unaware about how low its position had deteriorated among some local politicians and their youthful supporters. The corporation repeatedly displayed a lack of interest in local issues and welfare, Essien believed. "Everyone in the Delta is fidgety, and militants may be looking for a pretext to expand their swath," the American consulate in Lagos reported. "ExxonMobil is talking with local leaders, and yet, even if we keep the professional militants out, ExxonMobil will still have a difficult time working with the local youth to resolve this situation." The abductions from Nancy's bar signaled just how much had changed. ExxonMobil had been warned. The 7 kidnapped ExxonMobil expatriate contract workers were threatened by their kidnappers, but not beaten during their first 10 days in captivity. They slept in a makeshift camp deep in the Delta's palm-shrouded swamps, where muddy creeks and eddies snaked through thick, humid foliage. The kidnappers seemed to be heavy drug users and often preoccupied themselves by getting high. They fed their victims rice and water, but the men felt hot during the day, cold at night, and wet perpetually. They kept up their morale by talking about food and soccer. Their captors opened talks by cell phone with Sparrows' chief executive and with Victor Atta, the Akwa Ibom governor, a full-faced man who espoused Christian principles, wore business suits, promoted grandiose shopping mall and golf course developments, and owned a luxury home in Lagos. Typically, governors were called in to mediate ransom agreements in cases of this kind. It was presumed across the Delta that leading politicians and their security forces often took a piece of the action, although Atta himself had not presided over a kidnapping industry in Akwa Ibom. In Lagos, ExxonMobil security officers and counterparts from the affected contractor companies formed a crisis management cell and met daily. ExxonMobil retained Controlled Risk Group, one of the major kidnapping management and security firms operating in the Delta. The consultants advised that it was important to have only one channel of communication between the kidnappers and the government. Typically, kidnappers will use their victims' cell phones to reach out to family members to negotiate, issue threats, and raise pressure on the employers. Controlled Risk contacted the families of the victims, passed along cell phone numbers that might be used in this way, and urged the family members not to answer. The Exxon crisis cell also urged Governor Atta to persuade the kidnappers to allow a delivery of humanitarian supplies to the hostages. The British Foreign Office took a leading role. Washington involved itself as well. After September 11, the State Department set up an enhanced interagency crisis response team that could rapidly deploy to help governments respond to hostage takings, particularly those involving Americans. By 2006, the team had drilled for just the sort of crisis that ExxonMobil now faced. But the idea that American and British intelligence and security officers might parachute into Nigeria to sort out hostage crises made the Nigerian government uneasy, as a State Department official involved put it. It did not thrill ExxonMobil either. The corporation's security officers were at times reluctant to share information about kidnappings in progress with the American government, fearing that sensitive details might be released under the Freedom of Information Act or otherwise leaked to the media, compromising negotiations. Unless serious injury is imminent, companies prefer to negotiate without embassy intervention unless intervention could be discreet, a cable to Washington from Abuja noted. Ransom negotiations reached an impasse, and the kidnappers panicked. They beat the four Scotsmen with sticks and slapped them around with machetes. They handed them cell phones and ordered them to tell their corporate bosses that they were in danger of being shot. One morning the kidnappers beat Graham Buchan again and then handed him a cell phone. One of the youths threatened him with a loaded gun and instructed him to report, falsely, that his fellow captive, Paul Smith, a father of two, had died of malaria, and that the others were at risk of imminent death as well. "I'm afraid the gun at my head might have uncovered a talent for acting I didn't know I had," Buchan said later. The kidnappers called Governor Atta to report that Paul Smith had died. Atta was furious, he recalled. The death of a British kidnapping victim snatched from ExxonMobil's fenced compound would devastate Akwa Ibom's reputation for business and development. "I do not talk to criminals," he snapped, as he recalled it. He hung up and ordered an aide to send a message to the kidnapper who had telephoned. "Tell him I hope he knows the cost of transporting a corpse from wherever it is back to the man's home country, because the man will want the body brought back to be buried." The governor hoped, he said later, that he might unnerve and rattle the kidnappers with this hardline attitude.